Welcome to Organizing with Ease. I'm Zeenat Seaman with Firefly Bridge Organizing.
And I'm Deanna Mall with Ease Declutter.
This is where we talk about ways to make organizing easy so that we can enjoy our daily lives with less stress. Today, we present our second guest in our March Madness of guests, Ellen DeLapp, who is going to share with us her ADHD-friendly tips and strategies for successful organization. Ellen is a certified professional organizer and a productivity consultant. She's also past president of NAPO, the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. She has extensive experience working with ADHD individuals and holds certificates of study in ADD and chronic disorganization, and is a member of the Institute for Challenging Disorganization, also known as ICD. She works with families as a family manager coach, is an accomplished speaker, and she holds a bachelor's degree from Smith College and a master's degree in education from Boston College. Welcome to Organizing with Ease, Ellen.
Well, thank you all. I'm so excited to be meeting with you all today.
Thank you. We're so excited to have you here. So first, Ellen, tell us, what is ADHD and how it can affect an adult's daily life?
So ADHD is a brain-based condition that focuses on executive function issues and challenges. And the daily lives of people that I work with range from challenges that are at their home, like getting laundry done, getting dinner on the table, to time management, finishing things on time, getting started with projects at work or at home. So, and most especially, it really manifests itself in organizing challenges, like making decisions about what to keep and what to let go of. So decluttering, planning, and executing.
And that's what you mean by executive functions, the functions that deal with getting yourself organized, planning, things dealing with time, that sort of thing?
So there's actually a range of executive functions, even relating to emotional regulation, as well as self-control, impulsivity. So it's a broad range of functions that really guide our daily lives and our work lives.
Right. And so when you're working with clients who struggle with ADHD and the challenges that they're dealing with their daily lives, do you find that starting a project, and here we're talking about organizing, but it can really be anything. It can be, I need to get my laundry, but just getting started is sometimes a challenge.
The biggest challenge. Yeah. So, you know, I think that the key word that I hear the most is overwhelmed by my clients, which you all probably feel is one of the most key words you hear too. Yes. But this especially rings true for people with ADHD, because they might be amazing at planning the project, but initiating the project, getting started on the project, is the hardest part. It's almost like there's a paralysis that has happened, even though they know exactly what to do. And so I love that we're approaching this topic with organizing with ease, because I think the people with ADHD would say that is the farthest thing from my mind. So give me the tricks. How do I do it? Right.
What do I do?
Right. Yeah. What do I do first? Exactly.
What do I do first? Right.
And so you're working with, I would assume, moms and dads part of the time, who are, we're talking about parents, let's say, with who are suffering with ADHD, and they're trying to manage their entire households in addition to their careers and that kind of thing. So if getting started is kind of the biggest thing, how does the family play into helping them to get started or to continue and get that project done, whatever that may be?
That is a fabulous question, because I think that there's sometimes a little bit of a trick to pulling your family in. And that trick really empowers the person with ADHD to get started. So whenever you can partner up, there's two ways that I talk about partnering up. People come into the space and work with you. So you have like this collaboration going on, which is wonderful. So it doesn't always have to be your life partner that is the person working with you. It could be one of your kids. But also, there's this amazing opportunity for something called body doubling, which I don't know if either of y'all have heard about. Have y'all seen that? Yeah. So that's when someone comes into the space and actually just lends you their energy. They're just in the space with you, having a conversation, Sometimes I think my clients might say it's almost like a it's a positive distraction. And right. It's just tethering them to the spot they're in. So yes, your family can be a very, very empowering, like body doubling, or I call it clutter buddy being.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
I like that one, the clutter buddy. Yes.
Yeah. And so, okay. So then in a sense, body doubling can help you stay the course. So I'm thinking whether or not you have ADHD, sometimes you get into these organizing projects, you kind of start and then you've got a mountain to climb because you see how big a job this might be. And having someone there just lending you their energy, chatting with you as you're working on things. And Deanna and I were talking about this. I'll go into someone's home and we start working on the spice drawer, let's say, and you know, pull out all the spice jars and they can see, oh, I've got 50 spice jars to go through. And immediately, oh, look, I've got cereals over here. And my attention, you know, their attention turns towards the cereals. Okay, let's just take a little breather. And hey, let's talk about, you know, when do you use this spice? Tell me, you know, we try to change the focus of, okay, we must get this job done. We must organize your spices and check expiration dates and blah, blah, blah. Instead, let's talk about something a little different on the periphery of what we're trying to do. And it kind of keeps the momentum moving, let's say. Is that what you've seen? And is that kind of the same thing that you would expect?
Yes. I think you're adding context, which a lot of the clients I have talk a lot about. This is a spice that I use with this. My family loves this dish that I make and it's their favorite. And so then you're probably saying, well, let's be sure we put it at the front of the drawer because you use it so often. And so, yes, it's just engaging people to be not so anxious about their organizing, because there's a lot of coexisting conditions, anxiety being one of them. And also what you're talking about is pulling out that person's strengths, which is another part of the making it easier for people with ADHD. Is like, I'm highly visual. Now I see I have 50 spices. Whoa, had no idea, because they were all dispersed around my house in my cabinets, right?
Right.
Good work.
Nice. Okay. And so how important then is it to create, let's talk about laundry, let's say, because that just happens to be these past few weeks, kind of one of those struggles that I've seen in several of my clients. Laundry piles up, waits till the weekend. And when the weekend comes, it's just too much. It's just the feeling of no way do I want to do any laundry. I don't want to do this laundry. Why is it here? And it becomes like a real challenge to get it done. Does creating a routine around laundry help to focus, especially people with ADHD, to get some of these tasks done? And maybe it's not all on the weekend. Maybe it's something that can be sprinkled throughout the week, that kind of thing. But how important is it then to structure some routines into their days?
It's so true. Structure is such an important part of the lives of people with ADHD, but that is very unnatural for them to create their own structure. So even when you're creating that structure with your client as you're partnering with them, be asking them questions. When is the best time for you to do a complete load of laundry? Because what y'all are probably seeing is the same thing I'm seeing. We're really good with getting it in the washer. We're pretty good with getting it in the dryer. And then we have nothing going on. It's just in the baskets everywhere, right? So yes, having these conversations about what do your routines look like? When are you home? Like people have started routines and they haven't worked perfectly because there's a lot of perfectionism in my clients. And so then they've given up on them. But going back and reinforcing, this might not work perfectly every day, but what's a routine that we could generally work on and create that structure? Just giving them like the permission to be a rough draft, so to speak. Like, this may not work perfectly for the next 2 weeks. Let's revisit this when I come again and see how it went. And so that gives them structure and accountability, because they know I'm checking back in. And when they know when my clients know I'm checking back in, it's like a loving accountability. It's not like, oh my gosh, this is such a fail. Why do we think we even start this?
Right.
But it's more like, yeah, it works pretty well, but what should we tweak? So yeah. So routines are very important. And even simple routines like laundry, meal planning,
dishes, washing dishes. Yes. Well, yeah. I actually like, I have to say, I like the way that you phrased rough draft, because it's actually a nice, it's a soft way to get something already in place and it's not permanent. So they can probably think that that's okay. It can change, but at least I have a start. So I like that. I like that rough draft. I'm going to be using that. So that's what I'm saying. I really like that. Yes, yeah. I do. Yes, I do. I like that a lot. Because it is. It's a nice way to get that schedule going.
Yeah.
And write it down. Do you have to write things down? Is that easier? So writing it down for everybody? Yes. Like a checklist.
Very
like the laundry.
Checklist.
Like have a big board in the laundry room. And they can like write. They can write it and they can see it.
Yes. I love dry erase boards. They're like everyone's best friend. The magnetic ones. And that gives everybody a place to not only get positive reminders, because I see them in families' homes. And of course, everyone loves to draw on them no matter what. But in addition, it's a place for you to put things that you don't have to keep in your head. Again, working memory is a challenge for people with ADHD. So the more we can see things and write things out and use checklists, the better.
Okay.
You mentioned, and it's kind of interesting that you said, routines are kind of difficult for people with ADHD to maintain and get to put routines in place and to maintain. But yeah, there's a bit of a disconnect because people with ADHD are also very good at planning something. And so why or how is there a disconnect? And what do you do to kind of, okay, you created a plan for this. Now let's figure out how to get to that goal. Is that how you work with your clients?
So I talk a lot about initiation strategies with my clients because I call it the warm-up. Like when all of our kids were in high school in math, they came into the classroom and the teacher, of course, knew that they weren't thinking about math. They were thinking about everything else. So they sat them down and had like three problems that they start just as like a review. So I talk about people about these initiation strategies because people feel defeated because the initiation's lacking, even though they're great at planning. And once they get started, they're amazing because hyperfocus takes over where they're really in the moment and in the spirit of what they're doing. So, yeah, so lots of different initiation strategies have to do with all the things that are around us. It might be we have a certain kind of music. It might be just gathering all the tools that you need to do whatever the project is you're working on. It might be that it's a series of reminders. So transitions could be hard. So you might have in the 15-minute reminder and then the now we're getting started reminder. So timers help a lot with 15 minutes of warm-up. So that way you're not having this big gap that you didn't accomplish what you wanted to just by having these initiation strategies.
And is that... So what you're talking about is basically breaking down any project into very specific, small, tiny pieces. The first is initiation, get up the runway to get started. And once you get started, complete these teeny weeny little tasks along the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Got it.
Exactly. Okay. That's good.
And how you've mentioned before to us that when you begin working with a client, do you talk to them or how do you find out what they're good at? What are they great at? And do you focus on that first?
So a lot of the strengths that my clients have to do, we focus on what I call their learning modalities. Mm-hmm. So commonly my clients are very visual people and they're what's called verbal processors. They really like to talk about the strategies they're using and understand them better. So to learn their strengths, I've done several coaching courses that I learned about the different modalities. So as I'm going in and look, we do an initial space review of what's going on in their space before we even get started. And I will point out things or have some coaching questions that have to do with how do you do your work? What processes do you use? So I'm sure you both do an intake like this too, where you're learning about what are your goals, what obstacles have you, what have you tried before, what didn't work, and then just by the language they're using, a lot of times you can tell what their processing modalities are. and then lean into those for their strengths.
Even if their modalities or learning modalities are different than those of their families, you're able to somehow create a mesh those different ways of working and learning to get them.
Yeah, I think with families, it's about appreciating people's differences. And I think more and more in post-COVID, we've been having these conversations about how our kids learn differently because of the experiences they had going through school during COVID, and how we need to bring out their modalities. And I think as organizers, we've always learned no family members, family members rarely have the same organizing styles that each other have. So we have to take that into account even more so with people with neurodiversity. So
got it.
Definitely.
And so as a family manager coach, does that mean that you also work with the kids in the family and kids?
Yeah,
with
so ADHD? A lot of times so a lot of times I'm working with kids that primarily the focus for many families is their academic success.
Yes.
But even their social success has become more and more important in the last few years. Mm. So yeah, one of my favorite dynamics is talking with people about their family meetings, which is when everyone comes together once a week to talk about their calendar, how they're going to work as a team, and then going off and having some fun afterwards. So, and then setting up these points of organization that have to do with how do we get ready for the week? So I talk about like a Sunday night reset where families are getting ready for the next week. So, and how do we do that? And who's responsible for what? So yeah, so we'll meet as a group. A lot of times I'll meet with just the parents to give them enough expertise to carry off the meeting on their own. And then just talking about how their family flows throughout the week, like reinforcing bedtimes for everyone, which is one of my favorite topics, actually. Everyone needs a good night's rest. Gosh. Yeah.
Everyone does. So, yes. Yes.
So a lot of this has to do with those experiences, like how do people interact and get things together as a family.
Well, Sunday reset is right up your alley, Deanna.
Yes, that is so true. I am so about all that Sunday reset for sure. I love Sunday resets. It's a good thing for our house. It works out really well. It really does. Now for children, is there something that parents can work with them? Because I know like boys and girls might be a little bit different, but like their toys. You know, like how would you go about helping a parent with their child with ADHD and their toys? It's always been that big question. Like the parents don't know, the toys are everywhere. I have these bins, but it's just not working. And before I know it, they're fighting because they're not sharing. And so how do you handle something like that?
So I'm very big on creating an environment that supports success. And so when I kind of look back at the Montessori approach as a former teacher. I have a master's degree in education. But what I help the parents understand is the value of having a place for everything for each of those toys and limiting the amount that your kids can access, and also having specific spots that everything goes back to so it's easy for them to put them away. So it's probably first educating the parent, thinking about what do you want this environment to look like, and then incorporating your kids to a small degree. But I put all the things in the garage that are taken out of that toy room so they can sit there for like a week so that someone can identify what is it that is really missing that someone was sad about. And often there's nothing that's been missed at all. And so, and then there's a lot of furnishings that support like IKEA. We see lots of IKEA in playrooms that have to do with, you know, well-organized bins and just creating I'm an over-labeler, I like to say. So everything has
to label everything. So
yes, labeling.
But basically, so toy rotation is a big part of that.
Toy rotation is a big part of that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what else? We do toy rotation is one thing. And you mentioned, and I think it's important to kind of reiterate, limiting the number of toys. I don't know how many times I've been in a toy room and the toys are everywhere. and the child happens to come in and I watch how the child is playing with it. When there are, and it happens to us as adults, when there are way too many choices, we get overwhelmed. We either, you know, leads to inaction, or maybe we make wrong choices. And I'm not talking about toys, but I would say the same thing for a pantry. For a couple working in the kitchen and they open their pantry, if everything is a mess all over the place, nothing is labeled, there are boxes everywhere, cans everywhere, bottles everywhere, you sometimes make not the healthy choice in eating because it's just too overwhelming to think about, I have to cook a good meal, but where am I going to find all the ingredients I need to make that healthy meal for my family? I'm just going to have a cookie. And I see that as adults. So I think limiting choices might be a part of that.
Exactly. We're so overloaded right now with decisions that we want to make it easy for ourselves because our cognitive load is definitely stressed right now with everything coming along. So fewer decisions make it way easier for sure. There's lots of authors, like I listen a lot to Peter Shankman, who has a podcast called Faster Than Normal. And his book is called Faster Than Normal. And it talks about the rules that he's built in for himself that have to do with limiting choices. And that often is really key. One of the parents I was working with recently told me that during the pandemic, she was so focused on helping her child with school that she boxed up 80% of her clothes and left basically 2 weeks of wardrobe and put them in the garage and has yet to take those clothes back.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. See?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Better with less.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, yeah. It really, sometimes this actually, I don't know, it actually is, this is a point that we all should just think about the things that we have in our home. Right. And then the amount, the quantity, because the kids can get so overwhelmed. I mean, like, yes, it's so much fun to have all these toys, right? Especially if you have a play date now that kids are having play dates at home, but you have to kind of look at the quantity of it. And so it's just, so I have a client that actually, what she does is she actually has a closet. She doesn't use the garage. She actually uses one of the closets that's hidden away. So that the kids don't go to that closet knowing that those are where the extra toys are. And so she'll actually keep some of the toys that are, especially for the birthday presents. That's also a big one when the kids get all these gifts. So what she can open up, the children are able to open up the gifts, but they're not allowed to actually they can unwrap them. Open. So she'll tell her children, you can only pick 5 out of your birthday gifts. And then the rest actually goes away. And I'm like, that's hard. That's a hard one.
That's hard.
Yes, that's hard. Because, you know, the child is like, it's my birthday. These are my birthday gifts. I want all of them. And the mom's like, no, you only get 5. And you're like, I'm like, okay. So,
well,
you know,
hopefully she'll rotate through the rest. Hopefully that's clear that, hey, we'll rotate through the rest.
Well, hopefully so. Hopefully so, yes.
Ellen, you look at a family as a team, right? You mentioned that you can get the support of, it doesn't have to be your spouse, it could be your child. But when you're working as a team, especially when you're having the family meetings and everybody's talking about how we support each other, when those relationships are good, things happen in the family. You see positive results. When there are things that are stressing out one or other of the family members, how do you get beyond that?
So a lot of times I think it's moving beyond the expectations we have and getting to know our kids and just listening more and more. We're hearing more about the mental health of our kids and how anxious they are. So we need to really hear them out and find out what's driving that so that we can find the support they need, depending on what it is. And so a lot of times our kids are finding negative ways to get our attention where, if we have some time alone, which is, you know, some of the structure we have to build into our week, but also just things that, you know, maybe one of your kids is interested in cooking and you're not so much, but you could partner on making dinner. Like nobody really wants to like clean a toilet or vacuum or whatever. But if we have the family dance party, which is like basically really cleaning the house. But so we can get buy-in. But I also want to encourage people to go beyond their families, because what I'm finding is when people are really stressed out about their home environment, it really brings them down. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you have been wondering about if it's time for you to hire someone to come in to clean your house or mow your lawn, or to use Shipt to get your groceries to your house, or any number of outside subcontractors that you could use, this is a great time to think about how the value of that could really add value to the relationships in your house. Because one of the family members I talked to recently that I work with, I mean, he was completely stressed out because his family will not do the Sunday reset. And so as a result, he was just feeling very discouraged. And so I recommended, why don't you get a cleaning person that will be partnering with you and do a little extra, such as, could that person take all the sheets off the bed, wash them, and put them back on the beds? So, you know, that really adds up when you have a family, how much time you spend doing these things.
Yes.
So
yes,
something like that. You know, other outside resources are a teenager that comes in to help during dinner time to, you know, get everything onto the table, get the kids seated, even if you're not eating as a family. Could you have another person just be in the space that's a helpful high school kid that could be, and you know, supervising your kids so you have a few minutes yourself? So
yes,
part of this is building a bigger team, and part of it is self-care, because the self-care evolves from getting a bigger team, so you don't have to do everything.
I think that responsibility that we take on, that's a lot of the mental clutter that happens within us. And I remember very clearly, we hired a babysitter for the afternoons after school who would meet us here at home when I came home with the kids to supposedly help me with the kids from that point on through dinner time. And then I would take over after that. But as soon as I would walk in the door with the kids, and even if she was there, I was taking on a lot of those responsibilities anyway. I wouldn't let go. I couldn't let, it took a while for me to realize I'm not serving them well by being as stressed out as I was and trying to get everything done, even though I had this helper here. And I think some of letting go of the responsibilities makes a big difference. And in fact, I used to tell myself, as soon as she gets here, what I have to do is go to my room for at least 20 minutes. And once I place that limit for myself, I've got to be in my room for at least 20 minutes, then often it would be 30 minutes, or I'd be doing something else, or I'd actually get to read. And when I came back out, I was in a much better mental state,
right?
Less stressed out, less yelling, and really enjoying the time with the kids from after school through the time that they went to bed. Whereas before that, it was really a struggle to enjoy being there with them, because I felt such a responsibility and so much stress around getting everything done, rush, rush, rush to get everything done. So I wasn't enjoying the time. So I think that's really important. I love that idea to have a team, regardless of who makes up that team.
One of the most effective things I've seen is people who hire homework helpers. And it's not that. So it's a high schooler that's sitting down with your child during homework time and basically semi-body double, semi-instructional, semi-organizational.
Yes. Fantastic. Priceless.
No, it's it is. I mean, I think our listeners are probably listening to be like, yeah, you know what? You're so right. But it's true. Once you have that help, it's that little help, right? You just have to start little. Like you just mentioned the app for shopping. If you just start really small, you'll see the difference, right? I mean, like I can say that I've taken on some of those apps and help, and it makes a big difference. So those that now have with the ADHD, I think that if you see that small difference, it makes it so much better. Like it's just like a world opening, right? I mean, like, I just love how you just said that with the resets on Sunday. My best one, I tell you, I do like that rough draft. I really love that one the best. And then writing everything down. And also the writing down also helps the meal plans in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Right. So it's basically these big boards, and you can have them everywhere because then everybody can like write on it, not write on it, you know, kind of read it and see it. My understanding is that it's better for them to see it repetitively, like on a daily basis. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I totally believe that. That's why so many times I tell people, you could have a dry erase or a just giant month at a glance calendar on your refrigerator. Because how many times do people pass by the refrigerator? Right. Constantly, right? Constantly. So the repetition is built in.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very true. And everything that that we've just talked about, we've talked about home, how to make things happen in your home, that transfers to your workplace. The very same things, the getting started, the initiation strategies that you've talked about, the building a team to get things done, having a body double at work can make a big difference too, to get those projects completed. I think sometimes we think about organizing as being a home thing, but it's every portion of your life, and it makes a big difference to have those strategies
very,
in place.
Very transferable.
Uh-huh. Very transferable. Good. So I'm gonna throw something completely different off, because I like what you've done in the past, and that is actually setting the word of the year. So last year, 2022, you used the word strategic. So if you would be so kind to explain the word that you have for 2023 to our listeners and why you chose that word.
Sure. My word is trajectory. And I love this word because I feel like I'm in a very data-driven mindset right now. And I don't think trajectory is always like an up to the right situation. It often looks like a yarn ball. So I feel like that word's going to serve me really well. And I actually love word of the year because it does guide me all the time to think about, well, what do I want my trajectory to look like for this situation? And so it's made me reach out to more people this year and do more personal networking that I hadn't done in other years. It's also made me think about where do I want to expand my business? So I added a printable this year. So yeah, it's been really positive. I love, what are y'all's words of the year? Now I need to know that.
Well, now it's trying to make me think. Like, now you made me think. Like, so last year you used strategic. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I'm thinking, well, now I have to actually think for myself. Now you're making me think for 2023. What would be my my word? What about you, Zena? What would be your word?
Well, my word, my thought for the year is amplify, to take what I do already and amplify. And I'm talking about in my own personal life, in addition to the business things, but
trying that down, that might be 24.
Well, that's a good thought. That's a very good thought. That is. So I just want to ask one more time. How did you, like, why did you start this word of the year? Like, what was that? Is there a story behind that as far as why
I've
you started
been doing it? For a while, I probably have been doing it since 2016. And I was just seeing how I already had established a lot of structure for myself. So having these goals were not necessarily meeting my needs, because I could reach the goals, but to be more strategic, I felt like a word of the year would give me bigger thinking than just a limited set of here's what I want to accomplish this year. So it broadened how I was accomplishing things.
I like that. Yes. Sounds good. Thank you for sharing for that. Thank you.
And how did you get started? How did you get started in the organizing and productivity world?
Mm-hmm. So I am a very, very long-term organizer. I started in 2000 and I read an article about our beloved NAPO in the Houston Chronicle. And I'm like, oh my gosh, people do this for a living. Everyone in our industry says.
Yes.
And I was fortunate enough to know right away this was something I wanted to start. So I started about 2 years into my work, I started realizing I had really similar client situations going on. I loved my clients. I'd pull up to their house. Sometimes they weren't there. I would be, their time management interfered with their being available. So they would show up a few minutes later. I would work in their home and I would see there's a lot of paperwork. That's another thing we didn't really talk about, is how to get started on papers, but it is very, very difficult. It's a love-hate relationship, I would say, with papers, with my clients. I'd see issues with laundry and getting dinner on the table, and then a lot of clutter. So I started taking courses through the Institute for Challenging Disorganization. And also I have the brain-based conditions specialist certificate from NAPO. So I felt like I wanted to get extensive training for my clients. So it's definitely a calling, I would say. This is wonderful. And like I said, I love my clients. They're super amazing people. So.
And you've taken your business out of the purely residential world. Do you also work with corporate clients?
I do work with corporate clients and small businesses. A lot of people with ADHD are entrepreneurs. And so I work with a lot of entrepreneurs that are so incredibly talented and skilled. So I am so amazed by their gifts. So,
right.
Well, it's amazing of the accomplishments that you have done in the past and all of your professional career and the effects that you've had on your clients. And thank you. This has just been, I'm telling you, this is a game changer. And I think that our listeners probably are now actually going to be implementing a lot of what you've mentioned, because you've actually simplified it to be for a basic understanding of how one can start.
Wonderful.
And I think
that was my goal. Thank you.
Ellen, tell us, if people want to find you, how can they find you online?
On Instagram, I'm Ellen DeLapp, CPO. And then, of course, I have a website, professional-organizer.com.
Perfect.
Thank
you. We'll put all of your contact information in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for being with us here today. Really
appreciate
it. Oh,
thank you all. It's so much fun.
This was very fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
And very educational.
A lot of fun. Thank you. Yes, totally educational. Love it. Thank you. Thank you for all that you do again.
Thank you to all our listeners for tuning in today. We're continuing our March Madness of guests for the rest of the month, and we're sure you're going to learn as much from our upcoming guests as you did from Ellen today. And we'd love to hear what you thought of this episode, so please send us an email at hello@owepodcast.com, and please follow the podcast so you never miss a new episode, and leave us a review. Join us again next week for more organizing ideas and tips. Until next week.